Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, over there in New York City, my man, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Ty, I am wonderful. I am excited. I am a little bit scared. I'm a little bit sad. It's all happening. And we've done the show for so long. I do have questions like, how can you see into my eyes like open doors, Ty, leading you down into my core? That's right, me, Dan, where I've become so numb without a soul. The Braxton Burmeister time was tough for me.
Ooh, my spirits. Whoa.
Yeah.
You're going a little harder with this one, aren't you?
Like difficulty or dark?
No, I'm talking dark. This is evanescence, isn't it?
Wake me up.
Yeah. Wow, you're feeling a little edgy tonight, my man.
Well, I mean, this is going to be a natural transition, but I'm not like the most enthused about the potential of my school to have to look for a coach twice in 11 months.
Yeah, how
about that?
That's not
my favorite thing.
Yeah, we got news. We got playoff rankings. We got conference championship week, a huge week of conference championship rematches, which we'll discuss here in a little bit on the show. A lot to discuss here this evening. You and I were talking beforehand. We're both pretty amped up for this show. This will be a fun one. This is, I think, for all intents and purposes, our last true preview show of the regular season, quasi-regular season, now that we're sort of in that weird gray area between postseason and regular season. But alas, a lot to discuss here tonight. Thank you for downloading the show. Don't forget to follow us out on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. We've got all sorts of fun things that I don't know if we're ready to announce live show stuff yet, but we're very, very close to making that a true thing that will occur.
We have reached an agreement in principle with a venue. So we're actually very excited about the venue. So, so things are moving along. We hope to hopefully have that by the end of the week. We're recording this Wednesday evening so that we can let you know so you can make your plans, or at least in the back of your head, if your favorite team appears to be in the running to be in Atlanta for the national championship, you can have that. You know, I think we're going to sort of stagger ticket sales. Is that correct, Ty?
Yeah, I think what we're going to do is put a lot out there for people who live in Atlanta, because when we did our survey, there were a lot of folks who lived in the Atlanta metro area that listened to the show and they want to come to live gigs. So those people, first and foremost, we're going to have a general admission lot A, let's call it, that will be available for you. And then we're going to keep some to the side for people who are coming into town for the national championship. And we also want to make sure that some of those folks are involved, whether they're listeners to the show each and every week or maybe just passing through town and want to check it out. So we're going to make sure we accommodate everybody. But I think the most important thing to note here is that we have reached, in principle, an agreement. In principle, I guarantee you it's stronger than some of the principal agreements, which we might talk about here momentarily when we get to coaching news, but we have an agreement with a venue. We'll make sure that you're accounted for if you want to try and get to the show.
Yeah, we'll once again have a pre-sale for our street team, for our premium subscriber. No, I always wanted to say stuff like that, but unfortunately, we do not have a tiered system.
No.
I'm ready for news, Ty.
Let's do it! We have breaking news!
Boop, boop. Are you the new Penn State offensive coordinator?
I could be.
What is the preferred system that everybody, I mean, I guess, I don't know if they're sponsoring the show tonight, so maybe we shouldn't give them a free shout out, but you know, get your resume all polished up, Ty. You are pretty good at NCAA video game wise. So
this is true. This is true. Maybe bring back Jay Paterno for a little spread 4K.
Yeah, the K is for kneel down when things aren't going great before the half.
All right. We got a ton of college football coaching news to discuss between hirings, between contract extensions, rumors, all the like. We're going to go through it here.
Painted geology.
That's right. Let's start with Dan Mullen, Yeah. Going back home to Florida, you'll know he was, of course, the offensive coordinator under one Urban Meyer. He was at Mississippi State, had a very successful run at Mississippi State. He has left that post to go back to Florida. I think a good move, not really a surprise, but Dan Mullen has been rumored to go back to Florida for quite some time now. It seems as if the stars were aligned to get him back to Gainesville.
Yeah, what he has done and did in Starkville was, especially recently, nothing short of incredible. And I don't say that to demean Mississippi State or Starkville, just, you know, playing in the SEC West and not having certain advantages like, say, Alabama, Auburn, and LSU. It's tough for everybody. And the fact that historically Mississippi State has had some down chunks of years and he was able to have the success both in developing specific talents like Dak Prescott and now Nick Fitzgerald and winning games against big teams. And now he goes home to a place, or home is relative, but he goes back to Florida where he had so much success offensively as the coordinator for Urban Meyer, knows that terrain, should be able to navigate an enormous, enormous program, and you would assume has some sort of experience in knowing temperament stuff. I think it's a very, very good hire, even though Florida swung for the fences with Chip Kelly, who ultimately wasn't a fit with the sort of magnifying glass that exists in Gainesville at such a huge program. But I think it's a very, very good hire, and his assistant hire is now Todd Grantham is coming with him from Mississippi State as defensive coordinator is known. So I would be very happy if I were a Florida fan. You know, the socks aren't knocked off. You're not floored because it's been a long rumor, but I think it should be satisfying.
Does this mean we're going to get a little third in Grantham, third in Gainesville?
I think that's what's happening.
Yes. No, it's a smart hire. He wanted the job. And somebody out there wrote it, forgive me for not properly citing it, but the point of the article was, look, if he can fix the quarterback situation, that goes an awful long way.
Mm-hmm.
An awful long way. Florida has been dominated so much by defense in recent years. If you can fix the quarterback situation, inject a little life into that program, it doesn't need to be the sexiest hire in the world. It just needs to be functional. And I think that's what this is. I like the move. By him leaving to go to Florida, that obviously opened up Mississippi State. They wasted no time tapping Joe Moorhead, the offensive coordinator, former offensive coordinator for the Penn State Nittany Lions, to come down to Starkville and steer the ship. There was a great newspaper cover down there that said "More Cowbell" that we shared out on our Twitter feed. Yeah, M-O-O-R, excuse me, Cowbell. That we shared out on our Twitter feed. Mm-hmm. Joe Moorhead is a very, very bright college football coach. He had a great run at Fordham. In 2 years at Penn State, he did amazing things with that offense. Obviously, big shoes to fill now on the coordinator side for James Franklin, but Joe Moorhead going to Starkville, I think, is a very, very intriguing hire. I like it.
Yeah, another move from a relatively big name, in the Northeast. Certainly, Matt Rhule was a head coach last year when he made the move from Temple, and Temple certainly a much smaller place in the college football universe than Penn State when he went to Baylor. But the fact that Joe Moorhead, the entirety of his career in earnest, has been in the Northeast, and he goes way south to Starkville.
Sure,
I don't think it's fair to immediately say, "Huh, that's a weird fit." Because I assume he's going to hire a staff that will round out the experience a lot better. And he has head coaching experience, and he is well-liked in the coaching community from what we've heard. So I think it's fair to assume he will adapt an offense to look like not what Penn State is running, but something with his vision on what Mississippi State has talent-wise and personnel-wise. And I don't know what they look like this coming year, but in terms of what was out there and what people think of Joe Moorhead and what Penn State has accomplished on offense, I think it's a very good hire. I do like it a lot. Very curious about the staff he puts together.
Him with Nick Fitzgerald could be quite interesting in 2018.
Absolutely. 100%.
Staying in the great state of Mississippi, Matt Luke, previously the interim head coach. He was named interim head coach after the whole Hugh Freeze thing blew up down there in Oxford. He has been promoted. By Ole Miss. He won the locker room. I thought did a pretty good job in weird circumstances down there at Mississippi. We'll have to wait and see if sanctions are forthcoming from the NCAA. Many believe they are. Nonetheless, Matt Luke staying put in Oxford.
Yeah, and there are certain, you know, there's pieces in Oxford. You know, Shea Patterson looks very, very good and unfortunately got hurt this year. But yeah. I am intrigued. I think the ceiling, because of looming sanctions and because, you know, that's going to be a question that recruits are going to ask over these next 1, 2, 3 years, whatever. It's, you know, it's not ideal, but the fact is, if Matt Luke won them over enough to the point where they have confidence in him to sort of weather things until potentially hiring somebody when they're clear of potential sanctions, sure, it's good for Matt Luke. It looks like he has a pretty good assistant pool to hire good coaches. So yeah. I am encouraged. Ole Miss put together a pretty good offense this year, all things considered. So I'm curious to see what they look like. My hopes aren't sky high.
Okay, Jonathan Smith. Everybody knows the name John Smith, right?
I mean, I do because I went to school in the Pacific Northwest. But
Jonathan Smith,
a lot of people,
the Washington offensive coordinator, before we hit the record, shortly before, is now reportedly going to be the head coach at Oregon State. There were rumors that maybe it would be Bo Baldwin, who is currently the Cal offensive coordinator. It looks as if they're going in a different direction. Jonathan Smith. At Oregon State, not a bad hire, not the sexiest hire, but it's Oregon State.
Has, yes, largely coached in the Pacific Northwest and Big Sky area of the country. Not a full-on beloved figure at Washington in terms of what their offenses look like this year. You'll remember, I believe it was 9 points against Arizona State and a pretty iffy performance offensively against Stanford, at least through the air. But I think he's pretty well regarded on the West Coast. Another guy who I'm curious what his staff looks like, what the offense looks like, because if anybody watched the Civil War, and I'm not sure why you would have if you weren't an Oregon and Oregon State fan last week, knows Oregon State's far away.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oregon not even competitive, Dan.
No, they were not right. Like from go, Oregon State was not competitive in a rivalry game. So I think the hire is fine. It's hard to know when you are a Chris Peterson assistant, how much you're responsible for. You know, Joe Moorhead comes to Penn State and State College, and clearly the offense is revolutionized from where it was beforehand. And you know that is the impact of Joe Moorhead. It's hard to know with Chris Peterson as the head coach what kind of role Jonathan Smith plays. But for the sake of Oregon State fans who kept hearing like, well, it might be Dennis Erickson coming back and he's 70.
Yeah,
like,
this guy's better than Dennis Erickson. I'll take him over Dennis Erickson.
Dennis Erickson has a better resume as a head coach. This is more encouraging as you look to the future and have hope.
And Boise assistants have been okay. They've been okay.
Yeah, Brian Harsin's doing a pretty good job.
Sure. Okay. And then the only other bit of, I think, official news that we can share before we dip our toes a bit in the rumor mill. Mm-hmm. Matt Campbell effectively re-upped for 6 years and $22.5 million. Whew. His annual salary is now going to be $3.5 million. He is staying at Iowa State. I think an awesome move for Iowa State. Obviously, a huge season, winning 7 games. Iowa State's in a really good place right now with him at the helm.
Yes, absolutely. I don't know if he's there in 3 years.
No.
But the fact is, committing sends a message both to Matt Campbell, to his staff, to the next coach of the Cyclones, realistically, that this is a program serious about keeping talent, coaching talent in place in Ames. And I'm always impressed when a coaching staff is able to win with backup or third string quarterbacks. Obviously, that's been my thing this year, but that is a good sign that you have a chopped coach and not necessarily an Iron Chef coach. Have I ever talked about that on this show?
Chopped and Iron Chef.
So, you know, you're familiar with these shows on Food Network, right?
Intimately familiar with these shows. I'm a big fan of Chopped, personally.
Okay. So we know, and I think this is important and relative during coaching hire season. Sometimes you see coaches out there who are putting up numbers on offense, who are shutting teams down on defense. Talent's not necessarily there. Sort of overperforming talent level and schedule. Those to me are really good chopped coaches. Mm-hmm. They can sort of take ingredients. Can't stress this enough. Athletes are not food. This is just a metaphor.
Yeah, this is a little weird. Yeah, sure.
But, and sometimes you see coaches and you wonder, well, they're an Iron Chef and they have the best ingredients and they have sous chefs and they have the best equipment and they have the best of everything. How good are they when they're thrust into a situation where they have to cook with strawberries and nerds and chicken liver? So I think right now what Matt Luke and that staff has done, not recruiting on the biggest level, taking down schools like Oklahoma and TCU. Great chopped coach. There are certain coaches out there, like, and this is not a knock, maybe like Brent Venables, who has had Oklahoma and Clemson talent to work with. Doesn't mean I think he's only good with great players. Just means I'm more curious to see what he looks like put into situations in the modern college football world with perhaps lesser talent.
Well, and as we get into the SEC coaching search, which we're going to talk about here momentarily, beating Bobby Flay seems to be more of the theme in the SEC. Not beating Bobby Flay, but how the hell do you beat Nick Saban? Nick Saban in the SEC is driving people crazy. Every team, literally every team in the SEC has had coaching turnover since he first came to Tuscaloosa. It is driving schools mad, trying to figure out exactly who can beat Alabama. So here we go. Jimbo Fisher, potentially the next coach at A&M. We don't know. Florida State's got a game. We'll talk about it briefly at the end of our show.
Not a lot of thoughts about that game.
No, I mean, who cares about the ULM game, right? If they win, they could go to a bowl. Will Jimbo be there remains to be seen. Bud Elliott's been doing a great job. We'd encourage everyone to go follow our friend Bud. He's got an inside track on a lot of what's going on in and around the Florida State football program. Right now, there seems to be a ton of steam on Jimbo taking that Texas A&M job. It would be a huge coup, to say the least, for the Aggies to bring over a proven head football coach, someone who brings with gravitas, someone who's won a national championship. There's been speculation for a while that Jimbo's ready to move on from Tallahassee, and there does seem to be a lot of forward momentum on that move happening. We will have to wait and see what happens, though. It won't happen before Saturday's game, again, against Louisiana Monroe.
It's not looking good for Jimbo sticking around Tallahassee. It appears to be, you know, as great a program as Florida State is and as great a job as it would be for 99.9% of coaches across America, there appears to be interpersonal disagreements as for money, as for what Jimbo's responsibilities are, how he gets along with various, you know, it's like a booster organization thing. You know, there's back and forth with the president if you read what Bud has written for Tomahawk Nation. And, you know, at a certain point, he's been there for, I think, about 10 years since he took over as the coach in waiting coordinator for Bobby Bowden. That's a long time, Ty.
We had him on the program when he first was announced as the...
We were 15.
Yeah, as the new coach at Florida State. He was one of our first coach that we ever interviewed.
And yeah, it's a long time. And I know people are now saying, well, is Texas A&M a better job than Florida State? I don't believe that to be the case.
No.
But Texas A&M is a chance to reboot. And that, I think, on a human level, is necessary. And we'll see what happens if, you know, Jimbo Fisher and the Florida State relationship is too far gone. You know, for the sake of Florida State and for the sake of everybody, I hope everybody can figure out a way to be happy. And if that's Jimbo going over to A&M and starting fresh and Florida State hires Willie Taggart, I guess I would be under the unhappy umbrella in that scenario.
If, in fact, Jimbo does go to A&M, it does appear as if the Florida State search would center on Willie Taggart. There are reports that they're doing some background work on him. He's from Bradenton, Florida. He's obviously done a really good job everywhere he's been a college football coach. He's turned programs around very, very quickly. He's a guy who's long been rumored to go back to the state of Florida. It appears, whether or not you believe that rumor or not,
right,
at a minimum, a lot of what's going to transpire in the coaching realm revolves around Willie Taggart and whether or not he decides to take that job or any other job out there.
And Jimbo, yeah, the two of them,
yep,
I think, are the key right now. And I think the other name that has been mentioned in a number of places, including Tomahawk Nation, is Justin Fuente, or Fuente, who certainly has had a ton of success in Blacksburg early. But I think you can tie a lot of that to the consistency on defense and maintaining and keeping Bud Foster around. So we'll see. And he seems very happy in Blacksburg. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
A lot of conflicting stories. I don't know what direction in the Oregon domino would then fall with the market where
it
is.
Oh, my God.
Right,
we could probably do another 45 minutes talking about those dominoes and those rumors, because there are a lot of them out there. If I could, real quick, before we go too deep down the rabbit hole of Oregon rumors, there was another interesting rumor in the Pac-12 pertaining to Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, we were reading reports about Derek Mason. They really like Derek Mason, currently Vanderbilt coach. Mm-hmm. The latest rumor is Herm Edwards.
Yeah, and other longtime NFL figures.
Bruce Feldman reported that. Not crazy about that one.
Jim Tomsula. Jeff Fisher. I only half kid about Jeff Fisher. What are you doing, Arizona State?
I don't know.
Arizona State's a pretty good job.
I mean, I think NFL coaches going to college in general is a little bit more successful than college going to the NFL. But still, I think you want someone current, someone relevant.
Yeah.
And Herm Edwards is an enthusiastic guy, certainly a leader of young men. That would
could probably recruit all right.
Exciting. Yeah, I think he'd be fine in terms of recruiting. But yeah, he's been out of the game for a while. We'll see where ASU goes. The final tidbit before we actually get to talking about the week 14 / conference championship week in college football. What a debacle. A hot mess, as our friend Bruce Feldman called it, going on currently in Knoxville. So here is the timeline of events.
Yeah.
Shortly after or around the time we did our show last week, things were bubbling up about Greg Schiano to Tennessee. It was rumored and appears to be the case that they had some sort of memorandum of understanding agreed in principle between Greg Schiano and his people and the Tennessee administration. That very quickly became unhinged. There was public outcry for a variety of reasons, which we can discuss here on the show.
Sure.
But those reasons, among many others, led to Schiano being unhired by Tennessee, which is not something you see a whole lot of in college football.
Right.
But the outcry was such that both sides backed away from the deal. It has since spooked other names that could have potentially been interested in that job. Mike Gundy, David Cutcliffe, most recently Jeff Brohm, certainly John Gruden. We're now down to, I don't know, maybe Plan F in the whole Tennessee coaching search. Suffice to say, this has gone horribly wrong since firing Butch Jones. And I don't know who's eventually going to take that job. I guess Jason Witten said that he would leave the Cowboys to take that gig if they wanted to give it to him.
Is that true?
Yeah. So, look, I don't think they're going to go in that direction. I'm just not sure which direction they go to. Right now, potentially centered on Dave Doran from NC State, which, folks, if you weren't excited about Greg Schiano, you're not going to be any more excited about Dave Doran, but... what's your take on this? I have many thoughts, but let's start with you.
Okay, so a lot of people were very quick to say, this is what went wrong. This is the big, bold headline. This is where it went wrong. And people were blaming Twitter mobs, and they were blaming, you know, Greg Schiano, and they were blaming John Curry for being incompetent, and they were blaming donors for controlling too much, or boosters, whatever, and notable, you know, Albert Hainsworth came out saying this, he needs a new team.
Oh, we had congressional representatives weighing in on this.
You had fake Sarah Huckabee Sanders Facebook accounts. Like, it was a complete and total circus all the way around. And my biggest thing in watching this was, maybe more than one thing can be true at the same time.
Oh, totally, Dan. That's
maybe
it. That's
four
it.
And a
totally.
Half things. Yes. And so I've generally felt that it was disingenuous to say, well, these angry Twitter Tennessee fans like Valdude69, the fact that he was yelling and calling John Curry's cell phone is why. No, I don't believe that. I believe that there was unhappiness among money people, notable people connected to the program about potentially hiring Greg Schiano. And I don't know if it were a big booster who decided this is who our guy should be. I don't know that to be the case. But the fact that people were using a very, very flimsy connection to the Jerry Sandusky thing to be morally outraged when it seemed, Ty, this is in my personal opinion, that was sort of a scapegoat because Greg Schiano is not a particularly liked person just publicly in the football world. With his time at the Bucs, with his time at Rutgers, he didn't. And I say this as somebody who roots for a team who was rumored to be talking to or interviewed last year for the open job. if that were a possibility, I would have been pretty let down as an Oregon fan. And I get that. But this was a monstrous circus.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Greg Schiano's got some baggage, all right?
Sure.
He's got some baggage. Not just things pertaining to Penn State, things pertaining to his time in the NFL as well.
Mm-hmm. And he's not particularly well liked at Rutgers.
He's not well liked. No.
No.
If Chip Kelly, if John Gruden had the same baggage as Greg Schiano and Tennessee hired him, do you think there'd be public outcry?
You're saying so if Chip Kelly completely alienated people on his way out of Oregon as
Yeah, he's got all his accolades, but
right.
In addition to, he also has the Schiano baggage. Do you think there'd be Twitter outcry? Do you think there would be this kind of blowback?
Do you think when you say Schiano baggage, do you mean like the Penn State, like alleged allegations that weren't ever, you know, that was never charged
sure.
with anything?
Sure, sure.
Okay. I think it would be much less so.
I agree. And that, I think, is the larger point here. The bottom line, Tennessee fans didn't like the hire. And some right. justified it, to your point, through different means, right? There was a quasi-connection to a scandal at Penn State. There were other scandals, other oddities throughout his coaching journey that mm-hmm. people didn't like. Ultimately, the name didn't have the sex appeal. It didn't. Sure. And it reminded me a lot of the George O'Leary debacle at Notre Dame. Now, we're talking about deeper subjects here with yes. Schiano. But in that case, Notre Dame brass hired a guy that Notre Dame fans didn't want. Or some boosters didn't want. And they found a way through a resume glitch to get him out.
Do you think that the situation in Knoxville, now that they have gone from just, I mean, the Gruden thing was never a serious thing that was going to happen. But do you think going from a name like that, being associated to Schiano, to Gundy, Cutcliffe, do you think there is real world toxicity to what's happening right now within the Tennessee football program and in Knoxville?
Toxicity?
Because of the power dynamic within this program.
Probably. At a minimum, I think it's toxic to some young coaches like a Matt Campbell, who might have been interested.
Right.
You know, we saw Jeff Brohm pull himself out of the running.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Gundy had played footsies with Tennessee previously. He did again. He decided mm-hmm. not to take the job. There's very clearly a reason. Chip Kelly, another one. There's very clearly reasons why some of these guys don't want the gig.
Yeah, I think that the Chip Kelly thing, I mean, we just haven't seen reports. It just seemed like he was like, no, I'm not interested.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, look, it's a fishbowl job. We knew it was a fishbowl job.
Right.
And now to see this play out, a lot of the blame does fall on Curry, the AD. And
right.
I thought Andy Staples hit it out of the park. He wrote something for SI.com, which everyone should check out. And his point is, look, the blame is on the administration. It's a giant mess now. And the reason we're here is because they did not understand their base. Now, whether right. or not the base is acting irrationally is a separate point altogether. But he did not understand the base. He did not understand that this would go over the way it did. And because of that now, because he didn't float a trial balloon, let's say, to just take the temperature of the maneuver, now all of a sudden, this is a far more toxic job than it was 2 weeks ago. And that's where you're at now. Now, Dave Doran? Are you kidding me? Dave Doran did a great job at Northern Illinois.
Yeah.
He's done a really okay job at NC State. You're going to go from John Gruden rumors to Dave Doran?
Well, I mean, you're going from Mike Gundy to Dave Doran.
But still.
Realistically, yeah.
Dave Doran? Are you kidding me? That's what you're going to get now? You fired Butch Jones for Dave Doran?
One of the things that I don't think Nick Saban gets credit for, because everybody just sort of looks at him as like this machine who keeps winning and recruiting five stars, is how good of a job he's done getting the Alabama infrastructure, and that includes, you know, donors, boosters, administrators, whatever, lockstep. He has them under control. He doesn't put up with a lot of the garbage. And you can do that when you win, obviously, but he has the force of personality, given his background, LSU and the Dolphins, whatever, the fact that he is the name that he is, or just his specific organized personality and process and success, whatever, that he can say, nope, this is how it's going. Nope, not doing that. This is what I'm doing. Nope, this is my schedule. I don't have time for that. And at a place like Tennessee, where you have that, I mean, clearly with the John Curry situation and the booster situation, whatever, there is that power vacuum. And they desperately need a coach like that to say, nope, this is how it's running on Mondays. This is how it's running on Tuesdays. I don't have time for X, Y, and Z. I have time for A, but not B. That's what Tennessee needs. And they are going to, if they're going to get it, they're going to pay a premium, Ty.
Yeah. Yeah, they're,
and that's
they're,
what some people said about Jeff Brohm, that he has that type of personality.
Nah, he's not interested now. Why would you be? I wouldn't be.
That's tough.
Dave freaking Doran. How about that? How about that? Butch Jones to Dave Doran. Great. We'll see what happens. I feel bad for Tennessee fans that weren't part of the angry mob. I even feel bad for Tennessee fans who just weren't excited with the Greg Schiano hire. Because honestly, if I were a Tennessee fan, I wouldn't be excited about that either.
Sure.
You know, nobody would. It's not an excitable name.
As somebody who's had to recently root for a Brian Van Gorder defense, you're there.
No, I hear you. I get it. Yeah. I get why people weren't excited about Greg Schiano. I just feel like the administration botched it. And now it's a worse job than it was. It's a less attractive job than it was 2 weeks ago.
It's tough.
Crazy. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see. That's all we got on the coaching front. We got to talk about games. Are you ready?
Should be. Nebraska's still open.
Nebraska's still open, yes. Yeah. To be continued.
Dan, time, help. I need picks of the week.
All right, real quick, your new rankings came out on Tuesday. Clemson, yep. Auburn, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, in that order, 1-4. Followed in close proximity by Zombie Alabama. Roll Tide for the first time in as long as I can remember. Alabama fans, they got to defend their turf, Dan.
They do.
They got to. They don't like it. They don't like that they don't have a win over a current top 15 opponent. We tweeted it out.
Yeah.
People said, well, they beat Florida State. They were number three back in week one.
Oh, man. What a different world.
That's not the way it works, people.
No.
They're number five. They've tasted their own blood. We've talked about that before. We'll talk about it again. Zombie Alabama at number five and Georgia at number six. It sets up an extremely interesting conference championship week, Dan. We've got seven rematches that we're going to talk about this week, which is a lot. The math, I think, tells us, I looked this up on some choice sites on the internet. The math says that, like, a third of those teams will lose their rematch. A third.
Yeah, that checks out. The rankings seem what they should be in the top 10 or so. Penn State is not that far off from being in playoff contention in terms of how they finished games against Michigan State and Ohio State. Just brutal because it's a really good year for Penn State to have gone 11-1. It's a really good year.
I know. I know.
And so USC at 10-2 makes sense. I don't think USC has a prayer at the playoff, even if they destroyed Stanford like 56-3 and everything's ugly in front, just because they've just been out of the conversation, fair or not. I do think UCF at 14 is too low.
No, way too low.
I think at 11-0, running the table, I would be perfectly, you know, ahead of TCU, Stanford, and Washington makes, I you know, having them at number 10 seems fine to me. Having them as a top 10 team, going 11-0, performing the way that they have, and I know the Georgia Tech game got canceled because of the storm down in Florida, but that's not right.
They're that very is good. Very good team.
With their, it's too low.
So, okay, let's get rolling here on Saturday. We'll come back to the Pac-12 game a little later on.
Mm-hmm.
If my research is correct, Dan, Dr. Pepper came in with a huge ad buy. They've got three sponsorships here for the Big 12 championship, for the SEC championship, and I believe the ACC championship.
Do you like my spots in their commercial? you enjoy those?
That I didn't tell anybody is about a that. Broer version of you, a broier, whatever the adjective is.
He has a stronger chin.
Yeah.
But I get like three or four tweets like every time that commercial airs. And I showed my wife, because I see it a little bit, and I showed Jody with an eye, and she was like, oh my God, that is you.
Yeah, I mean, that guy's got bigger pipes.
Yeah, bigger somebody pipes. Said bigger it's a combination of me, and have you seen the trailer for the new Netflix Punisher? There's that. That is the sort of morphing mold.
Well, I got to be honest, Dan, when people started tweeting it, I actually looked it up.
Yeah.
To see if it, see who it was. And I was wondering if you were holding out on me.
No, not holding out. Listen, let me be clear. We don't have a soft drink sponsor on this show, do we?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Dr. Pepper, my initials are part of your name. DR, I'm right here for you. Anytime you need me, I'm here for one of your commercials.
Another fun fact about Dr. Pepper, in addition to the tuition throws, which are going to go on, and are secretly my favorite part of the week.
Unbelievable.
During media days, during like all the media events that go on at the national championship, at least for the last 3 or 4 years now, they walk Larry Culpepper around. Like the dude who's in the commercial, he shows up in full attire.
He does. Like the knee brace thing, yeah.
And they give you the opportunity to interview him. There are radio shows that interview Larry Culpepper. We've had the opportunity. I don't know what we'd ask him. I'm not against Larry Culpepper, but that's a thing. He shows up in full Dr. Pepper regalia.
Larry Culpepper being around the national championship, and I hate that we are just so like comfortable saying this Dr. Pepper character's name. It's why I'm rooting for Georgia to make the national championship, to see him and Kirby Smart in the same room. That's, to me, that's my end goal of, you know, everything in Atlanta. I'm excited for the live show. I'm excited for football. I'm excited to see a bunch of pals down there. But if we can make that happen, that's key.
Saturday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox. We've got the Dr. Pepper Big 12 Championship game. They're playing it in Arlington Stadium. It's the first of its kind. Oklahoma, 11-1, about a touchdown favorite against TCU at 10-2. We will turn the clock back here for a moment. There was a regular season version of this game in Norman. Oklahoma won that game 38-20. It was 38-14 at half. It was not a close football game. If you watched it, if you didn't, just to refresh your memory, it was not a close game. Now, a lot's happened since then. Baker Mayfield went crotch grab against Kansas and then died and was reborn.
May he rest in peace.
You know, a calmer, more mature individual against West Virginia. That was a watershed moment.
The Baker Mayfiesis, he has risen.
Okay. Yeah, we can go with that.
Yeah.
But Baker Mayfield is still having an incredible season. I think it's instructive to look at that game and look at how Oklahoma used Rodney Anderson when they played 3 weeks ago, because he went off. He had
a huge all-purpose game.
Yeah, like 151 on the ground, 139 receiving, 4 touchdowns. He was a one-man wrecking crew, but I think it's important to note that he wasn't the only man.
Correct.
Because Baker hit 6 other receivers in that game. What I learned in that game, more than any other game Oklahoma's played all year, is how this Oklahoma offense is not just about Baker Mayfield, not just about Rodney Anderson. It's about Trey Sermon. It's about Mark Andrews, the big tight end. It's about a really young wide receiving core in Marquise Brown and CeeDee Lamb, and probably the best offensive line in the country. Oklahoma, right now, I think, is my favorite to win the playoff because of the number of ways that they can beat you on offense.
That's really interesting. No, I don't, and I don't think you're wrong. It's a good matchup for Oklahoma because TCU defensively has been so good when they haven't needed to bring a lot of pressure, because that front four is so good. We saw Matt Boson have that huge game last week. I really do like the matchup for Oklahoma. They played so well on defense the first time they played. You look at the sort of drives that TCU put together. It was a couple 3 and outs, 4-play drive, 5-play drive. They really did a nice job. TCU's running game, even though I like Shewo Alonolua, they're not the same when they don't have the same depth of talent without Darius Anderson. Yeah. I worry a little bit about Ken Hill, even though he had a good game against Oklahoma. It wasn't the most accurate performance. So I am looking forward to seeing what Oklahoma's offensive line does against TCU's front, because, and we've talked about this before, Oklahoma, after losing 2 extraordinarily good running backs, the best receiver arguably in college football last year in Dede Westbrook, they're somehow more productive.
They're great.
They're scoring more.
They're great.
And that's Baker Mayfield in the offensive line to me.
100%. Yeah, the only team all year to hold Oklahoma under 30 points was Texas.
Yeah, the clear best defense in the conference. Yes.
TCU is going to need to do that. if they want to have any chance. As a whole, their defense has been pretty good.
Yeah.
But if you look against the better offenses in the conference, like Oklahoma State, West Virginia, obviously Oklahoma, we've been talking about Oklahoma the first time around. Against the better offenses, they've been really inefficient. I am not convinced they can do it here because they give up a lot of big passing plays.
Yeah, I'm going to go Oklahoma here. I'm going to go OU. They have the clear best player and arguably, I mean, I really like all sorts of, all the parts of TCU's defense, but I think the Oklahoma offensive line is so strong. So I'm going to go with the best quarterback on a neutral field. You know, he's played well in big games. I'm going to go Oklahoma here, 35-24 Sooners.
I've got 33-16 Sooners.
Wow. That would be an incredible defensive performance.
33-16, I'll go. All right.
Wee-wee!
Another Dr. Pepper game. It's the SEC Championship in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Before we get there, Ty, because you mentioned the Dr. Pepper Big 12 and the Dr. Pepper SEC, I don't know if you were saving this. Quick thoughts on the can toss.
You know I have problems with the chest pass.
So that's your, it's basically like, are you a Dan? Are you a Dave? Are you, I forget the names in Twilight, but you come down in two camps. Are you about performance or are you about looks, style or substance?
I'm about changing the rules so you can either only throw it overhand or only throw it underhand. But the chest pass thing to me, I've talked about this for years on the show. The chest pass has done for tuition throws what the clap skate did for speed skating.
That is very specific. I'm not sure I follow.
The clap skate.
What is the clap skate? Oh, it's just that the low, long skate?
No, it's the skate in speed skating that it unhinges in the back. So you have the skate riding on the surface of the ice for a longer period of time. It allows them to go quicker.
Right.
They've had to change the rules of the sport in order to accommodate it. All the world records fell by the wayside because people are going so much faster. So I think the only solution to this issue is to either change the rules that it has to be a chest pass or change the rules that it has to be overhand or underhand. But you can't have a mix of styles because the chest pass, if you're any good at the chest pass, you should win 100% of the time.
See, I like the idea of it being a free form, wide open competition because then we see the people who are too proud, who think it is a look cool contest when it is a money contest, Ty.
This is true.
You do what you have to do to win. We talk about Herm Edwards going to ASU. What do you play for, Ty?
You play to win the game.
You play to win the game.
Yeah.
And you how much money do you think you win by throwing it with better form? I don't think you win much, if anything.
No, this is true. This is very true. I don't know. Weigh in. Let us know what you think.
You can't pay your tuition, Ty, with good form.
I mean, you could, but...
You could try. You could. I believe Ohio State does take good form.
Okay. Let us know what you think. The Dr. Pepper SEC Championship, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the home of the national championship. We will be there, as Dan said.
Yeah.
Saturday at 4 p.m. on CBS, we've got Auburn at 10-2, a three-point, a field goal favorite against the Georgia Bulldogs at 11-1. Mm-hmm. They call this the Deep South's oldest rivalry. It is the Deep South's, can't even say that, newest rematch.
Yeah, rematch, yeah.
This week. The first time around, Auburn won 40-17. It was a huge deal for the Tigers. I know we're all gung-ho on Auburn right now.
Rightfully so.
But that Iron Bowl a week ago, super physical, fair to say?
Absolutely.
There's 100% going to be a body blow theory going on here. I don't see how it can't.
For whom?
For Auburn. Auburn's going to be beat up after that game.
How did Notre Dame look after Navy?
Not great.
And Georgia played what kind of offense last week?
Yeah.
I mean, really well, I should add.
Yeah, no, they didn't have much resistance, let's say.
Okay. I think there's a little bit of that for both teams. I'd say much more so for Auburn, having played a tougher opponent in Alabama, excuse me. There is, so, you know, obviously the first thought when you talk about what could hold Auburn back now that they are, I mean, they are a defensive team that happens to play really good offense at this point because that defense is so strong. There is that letdown factor. They just won the most important. If Auburn wins the national championship, if Auburn beats, say, Clemson in a rematch in the national championship game, There is an argument to be made that Auburn beating Alabama
was the biggest game of the year.
Somehow bigger, a bigger deal. Yeah. Yes. I don't think that's fully true, but there's a discussion. So Auburn with a letdown factor that's on the table, coming into a game against a team that they've already beaten comfortably. They did a good job exposing the sort of misdirection elements of their offense against the Georgia defense. Georgia with a true freshman quarterback, I think that's sort of a misnomer because one, Jake Fromm has been excellent, and two, it's now what, the 13th game of the season, his probably 11th or 12th. So he is an experienced quarterback with a very good offensive line, with two or three really good running backs, and a defense that puts him in a good position to win. I think I'm more worried about what Auburn's offense did to the Georgia defense in Auburn. But, Ty, there's always a but. That's how I live my life. Mm. Always buts. Georgia is playing in Atlanta, which I believe is sort of equidistant between Athens and Auburn. But it should be a better
time
for Georgia. I believe so. Yeah, I looked it up. Wow. It's like an hour 40 to Auburn, and it's like an hour 25 to Athens.
Wow. Okay.
So I don't think I know, I'm from California, and I assume everything's 5 hours away from each other.
Okay.
I like the fact that Georgia will have many more Bulldogs in attendance.
Live Bulldogs we're talking about here.
Many more dogs in the crowd. I think because of the offensive wrinkles, because of the combination of Chip Lindsey and Gus Malzahn, because of the improvement along Auburn's offensive line, they've already proven they can handle to a pretty good extent Georgia's front. I think I'm going to stay with Auburn to get over that letdown factor and win this game 27-20 because of the experience they now have against Georgia.
I also like Auburn. I think it's a closer football game. I went deep into this game the first time around. I rewatched it.
Like Evanescence said, to your core.
That's right. I went back. I looked at all the numbers. The numbers are super interesting for Auburn, especially Jared Stidham. If you look at his completion percentage, you can blindly figure out which games Auburn won and lost. And that, you know, is that unique around college football? Probably not. But he's been completing like 70% of his passes down the stretch. And that's a big part of the reason why Auburn's gone on this run. The first time around, we talked a lot about Georgia stopping the run. I'd be curious to see what happens if they just come out with a mindset of trying to stop the pass, force them to run it, to win it. That could be an interesting way to try and play this from a defensive standpoint. It's kind of counterintuitive.
With the Kerryon Johnson questionable status, sure.
Exactly. Georgia's game, as you know, they want to try and beat you up. They want to run the crap out of the ball. They want Jake Fromm to throw it 15, 16 times a game. The first time around, Auburn held Nick Chubb and Sony Michel to 2.5 yards a carry. If you're Georgia, I think that presents a bit of a catch-22 here. The running game got you here, but if you stray too far from it, that takes Jake Fromm out of his comfort zone. When he's the primary component of the offense, things kind of go a bit off the swivel. I don't know what the happy medium is. I don't know how you tweak the offense enough that it's different and can confuse Auburn, but still doesn't take you out of your comfort zone. I don't know if that happy medium exists, and that's a big part of the reason why I'm still going to go with Auburn here. But I am worried about the Tigers being beat up. I think the physicality of that Iron Bowl is going to have a lasting impact here. So it's closer, it's lower scoring. I'm saying 23-21 Auburn.
Okay. I think it's more the emotion than the physicality because Auburn is deep. Auburn has played a lot of players this year. Just, you know, playing in such a big game a week after. And, you know, and Auburn did comfortably beat Georgia. We're not talking about a 10-12 point win. I think they beat them by 20-some-odd points, 20-23 points. So, yeah, I think I'm still going to go with Auburn here, 27-20.
Another Dr. Pepper game. This one isn't a rematch. It's the ACC championship game they played at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. It's Saturday night at 8 p.m. on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
The number one Clemson Tigers at 11-1. They were, when I wrote this out, about a 9.5-point favorite over Miami. I use past tense, were, because some news broke this week that Amon Richards, the star receiver, star snake bitten receiver, I should say, for Miami, he had to be carted off the practice field. And does it look good for him to play?
Yeah, hopefully it's something, it's just a tweak that he can get over or was a really bad cramp. Hopefully, I don't, you know, at the time of this recording, obviously there's no diagnosis that's public, but yeah, we're hoping Miami is at, you know, as much full strength as they can be. So yeah, Miami coming off of a Pitt loss, which listen, Ty, everybody loses to Pitt.
Everybody loses to Pitt. Let me ask you a question here.
Clemson's only here because they didn't have to play Pitt this year.
Exactly. I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
We know about Miami. Miami's a team that it's big game team. Big game team, mm-hmm. big game city. They've played really well when the lights are the brightest.
At home.
What is your biggest question headed into this game?
What Malik Rozier looks like under pressure from an excellent Clemson defensive line when he is not given a running lane. And he has made, at times, great throws. And even when routes are not there, he has been very good at taking off and turning really good coverage or a possible coverage sack into, did he just get 14 yards?
Exactly.
Is that what just happened? Okay. That's my question.
Whether or not Miami can establish anything on the ground is a big deal. I think that's the key to this one. And to your point, it's not just Travis Homer. Miami's two biggest wins were against Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. And in both those games, Malik Rozier was really active on the ground. And you're right, not design runs, but a scramble here, a first down there. This stuff adds up. It killed Notre Dame. I watched every minute of that game. It killed them. If I'm Clemson, if I can keep Rozier in the pocket, if I can take away Travis Homer, which we know they're good enough to do, that's the ball game. Let Malik Rozier throw it 40 times a game. Let him try to beat you with his arm. If I'm Brent Venables, I am perfectly content with that scenario.
That's a large if. This is a good Miami team.
It is. So, yes. But I'm saying if hypothetically you can bring this game to that point, that definitely favors you if you're Clemson.
Yeah, I think that is the clear concern if you are a Miami fan is what Malik Rozier looks like and how accurate will he be on third and six when he just needs to hit a slant. He just needs to hit a hitch, whatever the case may be. That's the big question. Also, Miami's not particularly good away from their home stadium. I was about to say Coral Gables. It's very much not in Coral Gables. You look at what they did against a down Florida State team, North Carolina, they struggled with. They, you know, to say the least, struggled with Pitt on the road in the mayhem on the Monongahela.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Monongahela. You were close.
Monongahela, excuse me. So now we have a second straight, not true road, but away from home game for Miami. They've shown some cracks, and now the Amon Richards thing comes into play to give them one fewer receiving target. The good news for Miami is this. Clemson has a first-year starting quarterback who has had to deal with injury issues. This is not a particularly explosive big play Clemson team. They're pretty efficient. You know, Kelly Bryant, I think, is still the most productive rusher for Clemson, even though Travis Etienne has shown flashes of complete brilliance at running back as a freshman. If you are going to give the Clemson offense problems, you need to win basically every first down and get Kelly Bryant to third and six, third and eight, third and 11, whatever the case may be. I like that phrase today. I'm not sure why. And that's when you have a chance to force mistakes, flush from the pocket, you know, throw across his body. That's when you get the turnover chain. Is Miami fast and talented and unpredictable and well-coached enough to do that? Absolutely. I'm not at all concerned about the Miami defense performing in a big game. I'm worried about the Miami offense.
Yeah.
I'm worried about basically everything Clemson does on defense and rushing the passer. I am in a way for Miami. That is, I have 34-20 Clemson here.
I got 28-17 Clemson.
Okay. Spread is what? Nine and a half?
Well, I don't know. It was 9.5 when I wrote it up, but now with Amon Richards, it could go up. I haven't looked.
Okay. Fair enough.
So we agree.
We agree.
Green a lot
Dr.
here.
Dr. Pepper? That was Dr. Pepper.
That was another Dr. Pepper. I think we're out of Dr. Pepperville right now.
And can I add something?
Sure.
Real quick. If you are going to this game in Charlotte, go to a ramen place. I don't know what the weather is like. It doesn't matter even if it's super hot. It's called Futo, F-U-T-O, Buta, B-U-T-A. I believe it's two words.
Wow.
It has unbelievable smoked pork, but like it's like a barbecue style smoked pork belly in the ramen. There's briskets, sliders, and fried Brussels sprouts. Go out of your way for Futo Buta. They are not paying me to tell you that. I had an extraordinary meal there.
Ramen, huh? Okay.
Ramen. Do it. Do it, do it. Trust me.
Also, Saturday at 8 p.m. on Fox, it's the Big Ten Championship presented by Discover. They play this one in the Lucas Oil Stadium.
When was the last time you saw somebody with a Discover card?
I've never seen anyone with a Discover card, Dan.
Could you imagine going to a restaurant with like a group of people and somebody has said, you know what, it's on me. And then the server comes over and they say, yeah, just, you know, get the check real quick. And do you take Discover? What? Don't ever. What? That would be incredible.
I've never met anybody.
Shout out to everybody that's listening that works at Discover.
I probably know more people that watch Bones than have a Discover card.
I don't know anybody that watches Bones.
So this game is between Ohio State at 10-2 and Wisconsin at 12-0. Ohio State's a 5.5-point favorite. I'd like to talk to you about a little problem I have.
Oh, God, Ty, is it going to be very personal?
It could be. I hope we can be honest with each other. I like Wisconsin football.
That's not a problem.
I don't find it physically attractive. Wisconsin is in my friend zone, Dan.
Okay.
So a game like this rolls around, and my choices are Wisconsin or any team that has any shred of appeal. Danny.
Hit me.
I'm just a girl in the world like you. I want to feel dangerous. I usually go the other way here. I usually just pick the other team.
Right.
So I'm biased. What I'm saying is I'm biased because I'm bored. I'm bored with Wisconsin. I like them. They're just not giving me the vapors. How do I overcome that?
You watch them play defense and shut down everybody that they've played. You watch them turn it on in the second half like they did against Michigan. You look at the fact that in the second half, Alex Hornibrook has been sensational of games. You look at Jonathan Taylor tailback, who is, I think, the clear best freshman running back alongside the guy on the other side of the field, J.K. Dobbins. You look at the fact that they were in this game last year, and you have, even though they lost the game to Penn State, this is a team that has experience in these sort of enormous games in early December. There's coaching continuity, even with the new defensive coordinator. There's a lot to, like, you can set your watch to Wisconsin football.
Wisconsin's a team with like a stable 401k and a Roth IRA. Ohio State can take me in a race car. Which one do you think I want to pick?
You do like speed, but you do go to sleep early.
Only when Notre Dame's playing.
Yeah.
I'm worried about Wisconsin in this game. I'm worried about them the way I'm worried about Miami, but to a greater degree. Mm-hmm. The metrics are fine with the Wisconsin passing game. I think mostly because they use it as a second fiddle and they use it in a lot of high percentage spots. The centerpiece of this offense is 46 rushing attempts. It's 243 yards per game. If Wisconsin has to lean on Alex Hornibrook to win this game, that's not enough horny, Dan.
It's trouble.
That's not enough horny. That is not giving me the vapors here. He's played 12 games this year. He's thrown at least one interception in 9 of them. If they have to lean on him, if they can't get that ground game going here against a very fast Ohio State defense, I think that's trouble. Big trouble for Wisconsin here.
I think that it comes down to who is able to dictate the style of this game. So against Michigan, you saw that it was back and forth and slow. And even though Michigan is not an up-tempo team, Wisconsin was in its comfort zone. And Wisconsin is a better version of that very good defense, deliberate offense system than Michigan is. They have the quarterback to do it. They have a better line. They have a better staff to run it right now consistently. If it speeds up, if, you know, Wisconsin turns it over early, if it's a type of game that is going to escalate quickly, that does not favor Wisconsin. And the concern for Ohio State to me is when they've played pretty good teams away from Columbus, they haven't looked great, especially in offense, but even defensively, they've been shaky. Wisconsin just flat out isn't tested. Like, how many good defenses has Wisconsin played this year? I'd say two combined in 12 games. Michigan and then like half of Iowa and half of maybe Northwestern. So we don't know. We just don't have the frame of reference with Wisconsin. It's the schedule thing. Wisconsin is not a proven commodity in the way that most teams in this position are. So Alex Hornibrook has to be wonderful on third down from the first drive on. He has to connect. And you know, there are times in games against the better teams where he does, and that's really good, and he can against Ohio State. We have a beat-up JT Barrett on the other side. I think he's going to play. Dwayne Haskins is certainly promising after what he did against Michigan, but this is a much bigger spot than he's ever been in. And they are just... Ohio State relies on talent to a point that I'm not fully comfortable with in a game of this magnitude. So
that's very fair. Very, very fair point, and a good point.
I'm pretty torn.
Yeah.
But right now, I think there is something about Wisconsin that worries me more than it should at this point in the season. Not knowing enough about a team worries me. And Ohio State, with the possibility to escalate things quickly and having their only real weakness, strong weakness, be maybe corner in that secondary, I don't think Wisconsin has the necessary game-breaking passing offense to take advantage. So I have it 27-17 Buckeyes.
Okay.
That's what I'm going with, because I think that combination of things, I'm more comfortable with that outcome than any other outcome, but not entirely over the top with it.
Yeah, I mean, what you describe is talent versus team football. And, you know, we've seen that play out at USC for a number of years now. They always have the talent, but playing together as a team, being consistent as a team, that's what they need to do if they want to get to the next level. And yeah, if you zoom in on the Big Ten, that's not usually a problem for Ohio State, but this year it seems to be a little bit out of sync here. I have gone the entire year believing that Wisconsin would get to this game and lose.
Okay.
And like you, that I think the closer it gets, the less confident I am in that viewpoint, because you bring up so many good points. I am going to stick to my guns. I'm going to say a very similar score. Ohio State wins. They barely cover, 24-17, but a good football game.
Yeah, and I don't think it's fully fair to say it's talent versus team football, because Ohio State might have the best rush defense in the country.
Fair. Yeah, sure. But
they play, I think, particularly cohesively on defense. I think, to me, the question is, what do they try to do? We've made probably too big of a deal of JT Barrett running the ball too much. And you know what? If he's beat up, I imagine he's probably not going to be given design carries all that often against a defense as good as Wisconsin's. But I don't know if the offensive cohesion is there week to week, or at least against pretty good teams away from Columbus. So I'm rolling with the team that I think can win in more ways. And the thought of saying, yeah, I'm going to roll with Alex Hornibrook against a really tough pass rush. I don't know. That concerns me.
It's the friend zone, Dan.
I don't know. I've been to Madison. I'd love to marry Madison. It's great.
Okay. And then we'll go to Friday at 8 p.m. Yes. It's another rematch, the Pac-12 championship game presented by 76. Is that a gas station out there?
That is a gas station. They were at Dodger Stadium for a long time. There was a big orange 76 sign.
They played at Levi's Stadium, an iconic college football venue. No doubt there will be terrible turf and bad sunlight and bad refs, the works, for the Pac-12 championship game. Mm-hmm. USC won the first game against Stanford by a 42-24 margin. They enter this football game as a 3-point favorite. Keep in mind, that first game was all the way back in week 2. We're all a little younger and happier back then. USC gained over 600 yards. It was the most ever allowed by Stanford under David Shaw. The operative question for me now is whether USC can do the same thing this time around. Can they do it? Let me frame it to you a little differently. Let me ask you a different question.
Give me something specific.
Have either of these teams gotten better since week 2?
Yes. By USC getting healthier over the course of the season than they were early on, I am still not fully convinced of the consistency of Stanford after they lost at Washington State and go sort of bouts of struggling to have an offense beyond Bryce Love and his high ankle sprain that he's had since, I believe, 2003. if you watched the Notre Dame game last week, Yes, I think USC, especially when you look at the stretch against the Arizona schools, granted, you're not talking about the best teams in the country, but against Stanford specifically, I like the success that USC's front had against Stanford's very good offensive line, batting down passes, granted, different quarterback situation for Stanford, which to me is an improvement about Stanford. But I think USC, in terms of what they're able to do on defense, they're a little bit better. I think the secondary has improved. Sam Darnold still worries me, but the Stanford defense doesn't fully scare me.
See,
that makes sense.
That's the thing. Like, I'm not sure. I go back and forth on who's gotten better and to what degree they've gotten better. You can make a case for both.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like last year for USC, where you looked at them and said, oh my God, the transformation from the beginning of the season to the end has been monumental.
Yeah.
It's been more of a slow build, and it hasn't been as dramatic, but it's been there. Mm-hmm. The two things that I struggle with, though, are one, USC has so much more talent, and they should win this game the way they did the first time around. They really, truly should. But secondly, David Shaw is a smart dude. And if you give him another crack at a team that beat him the first time around, at a minimum, I think that means a tighter football game. It's not a runaway train the way it was back in September. So I think USC wins the game because they have more ways to win, but I think it's tight. I think it's right on that three, like 31-28 USC, something in that vicinity.
Yes. And it's in what? It's in Santa Clara, whatever, which is obviously closer to Stanford, but I think I anticipate USC traveling a little bit better for this game. Yeah, I think it's a matter of USC self-awareness. How are they on first down? Are they trying to be Sam Darnold and the Trojans? Or are they Ronald Jones and Stephen Carr and the Trojans and with a good quarterback handing it off and just generating third and threes? So I think it's the self-awareness and how well USC knows itself. Defensively, I have fewer and fewer questions. They gave up a little bit to Khalil Tate. I don't believe KJ Costello is the threat that Khalil Tate is. But really, since that Notre Dame game, you know, against Arizona State, Colorado, and UCLA, nobody scored 25 points against this defense outside of Arizona. And even before then, we're talking about a 38-10 win. It's Oregon State, but they don't allow 30 to Utah. Even that Wazoo loss on the road, they didn't allow a ton of points. So I feel good about this defense. There's just, especially with, you know, Bryce Love in and out of games for a few weeks straight, I don't know if Stanford has the team speed necessary to challenge this USC defense. So I'm going to go with USC here. I think a little bit more comfortably than you have it. Coming off of, congratulations, their bye.
At long last, a bye week.
They finally get their bye. Stanford playing still, you know, two very tough lines in Notre Dame. I'm going to go with USC here. Something like 31-23.
Okay.
Yeah. So we disagree on the
sort of agree, but we both like the same team to win. All right. Other games here. We got to move quick.
No, we don't. It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
It is our show, damn it. The American Championship, also a rematch here. So many rematches. Yeah. Saturday, high noon, ABC, UCF. They're at home in their conference championship game. They're 11-0, a 7-point favorite against Memphis. Memphis is 10-1. These two teams met at the end of September. UCF gave them their only loss. They won the game by 27, 40-13. They ran up over 600 total yards in that game. They held the ball for 37 minutes. They got four turnovers. Scott Frost has had the Cinderella season. I expect him to be coaching elsewhere next season, so this could be his swan song. I like UCF here. I like them big. I think another instance where, yeah, it's closer than maybe the first time around, but I got to go with my heart in UCF. Let's say 45-31.
All right, so UCF, I think that was an emotional win last week against the Bulls of South Florida, right?
Yeah, great game.
That was a crazy, I mean, who was on the call for ESPN, or excuse me, for ABC?
That'd be our boy Adam Amin, yeah.
I believe it was Adam Amin. So there is a letdown factor anytime you get to play in front of nobility, Ty.
True.
I like Memphis a whole bunch.
Really?
I am not crazy about Memphis defensively. You know, you look at both of these teams and sort of the unspoken thing, or not unspoken, but under realized thing about UCF is defensively, they are really solid, especially, I mean, against the American, their pass defense has been real good within the context of, again, the American, but that's, you know, Memphis and Riley Ferguson, Anthony Miller. You're talking about a ton of talent for this Memphis team. I think because of UCF's defense, I think I'm going to go Knights here. The 7 points, it feels shootout-y to me, but the fact that it's in Orlando, God, you know what? In a shootout, take the points. I'm gonna go with Memphis here.
Wow. Okay.
I think UCF wins outright. 45-41 UCF, another shootout.
Okay. Another conference championship game, another rematch.
Yeah.
We've got the Marathon MAC Championship presented by Vizio.
Is that also gas station?
Vizio isn't. Marathon could be. Marathon. I never saw two sponsors before in one title. They play this one at Ford Field. It's on ABC Saturday at high noon. Toledo at 10-2. A 21.5 point favorite now over Akron, mm-hmm. who comes in at 7-5. They played earlier in the year. Toledo won 48-27. The only tidbit here I'll add, don't look at 7-5 for Akron and be too deceived by it. Three of their five losses came against Penn State, Iowa State, and Troy. Troy, of course, beat LSU. So those aren't bad losses. What side do we err on here at the Solid Verbal?
Err on the side of...
We err on the Woodside, Dan.
Ah.
Give me Logan Woodside and Toledo here to win this one comfortably.
I was going to say, light a candle for Jason Candle and Toledo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bad matchup, I think, for Akron. That's why the spread is what it is. It's 20 points. It's what's in Detroit, right?
Yeah,
so neutral field. But I think I'm going to go with Toledo here to win big.
Also at high noon on Saturday, the Dynacraft. What's Dynacraft?
Sounds like what Dynacraft
sounds like
is.
A boat company.
Marathon is a gas station, by the
way. Okay. Dynacraft is sponsoring the Conference USA Football Championship at Florida Atlantic.
It looks like they're children's bicycles. Am I looking at this correct?
Really?
Dynacraft Wheels, DYNA, United States-based distributor of bicycles, scooters, battery-operated ride-ons, and electric ride-ons.
That's right. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
Florida Atlantic at 9-3. They're at home, a 10-point favorite against North Texas. Two teams that have interesting coaching situations. We all know about Lane Kiffin. He's kind of a controversial figure in college football, right?
Only if you don't like fun, Ty.
Florida Atlantic fired their old coach after that guy went 3-9, three straight years. Lane Kiffin comes in there year one, he goes 9-3. The first time they've done that well since Harold Schnellenberger was the coach back in 2004.
Owls!
Right. Meanwhile, you got Seth Luttrell, who very quietly has done a good job for North Texas. He's not a household name yet. He could be in the future.
Sure.
Guy's only 39. It's only his second year. He took over last year after the Mean Green went 1-11 in 2015. Now he's sitting here in the conference championship game at 9-3. A rematch again. Florida Atlantic won 69-31 the first time around, so I'm going to go FAU.
Woof.
But a really good story just on the coaching front for both sides here, given the fact that we've seen a quick turnaround.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Owls as well here. The Mean Green have been led by their offense. Big fan of Mason Fine, but defensively, I think they're going to struggle with the Owls. So give me the Lane train. I think they win this by a couple touchdowns. I don't think they score upwards of 70 points again, but yeah, let's call it 48-35 Owls.
And then the Mountain West Championship presented by Hampton by Hilton. This is a rematch. Mm-hmm. Not just any rematch, Dan. Boise and Fresno played last week.
They did.
Fresno won 28-17. They should do this one like aggregate scoring like they do in soccer when you have two legs.
Okay. I like that. Like in, what is it? Champions Cup? Champions League?
In the Champions League, right. To be the one true champion, yeah. Boise would have to win this game by 12 or more.
I like where your head's at. Yeah, that makes sense.
They are at home in this football game.
Will Boise do it?
Sure. Why not? Boise wins on aggregate. Let's say they win this game. God, I don't know if they're going to win by that much. I'll go with it. 31-17.
So Fresno had both Alabama and Washington in the non-conference part of their schedule. So even their schedule, like you mentioned with Akron, who, by the way, you think you're going to ice that Akron kicker? I think not.
Nope.
Very trained. Wasn't that who James Franklin tried to ice? Way, way back when?
Yeah.
Fresno State is a 10-win quality team. They happen to play two super tough teams out of conference. But in terms of what they are, they've won 8 of their last 9. They lose a weird game to UNLV. But outside of that, they have been quite strong, especially on defense, especially running the ball. You know what? I think it travels. I think the fact that Jeff Tedford has this team playing down-to-down, play-to-play. I'm not going to pretend like I've watched a lot of Mountain West football this year, but I have been impressed the little I've seen, so I'm going to ride with Fresno here. I think they fully take the Mountain West Champions League back and forth. I think they win this game outright by 3. Give me the dogs in the San Joaquin Valley, 27-24. I ride with the SJV.
And then the only other game I have here, it's not a conference championship game, but I've labeled it appropriately as Florida State's 12th game so they can make a bowl. So that's really what this is. Also right. Saturday, high noon, ACC Network. Florida State at home. They're 5-6. They've got a game against Louisiana Monroe. The only thing really notable to me, we know they're going to win this game. They should win this game. The most notable thing is
Do we know they're winning this game? Florida State's not super good at football, and their coach doesn't sound like he wants to be there, Ty.
They got to win this football game, Dan. Just give it to Cam Akers like 25 times. They'll be fine.
Okay. I'm not nearly as confident as you are.
I don't know what the point spread is. I didn't even
write
really it
down. I'm really not. You want me to look up the point spread if you really want to take this game seriously?
Sure, why not?
All right, let's do it. I mean, the fact that this game was scheduled so Florida State could get to a bowl game is almost like a very karmic threat to the very core of Florida State. So Florida State is favored by 27 points.
So you got to go. You got to go fun row then. You got to go the points.
I'm going fun row. I'm going Louisiana Monroe here to keep it closer than 27.
Okay.
With the Florida State team who is crumbling a little bit.
A little bit. Sounds that way.
Yeah. Why not?
Okay. There you have it. By the way, I'm locking up Oklahoma.
Lock of the week.
They're my lock here.
I'm locking up Clemson. Lock it up.
Lock of the week.
There you have it. A longer than usual show, but gosh, that's we fine. Had a lot to talk about between coaches, between playoff rankings, and between 7 rematches on conference championship week. Please do give us a phone call as you have in each of the previous 13 college football Saturdays. Our phone number 408-VERBAL-1. That's 408-837-2251. We will do our final reverbs of the college football season on Sunday morning when Dan and I reconvene to discuss all of this action and much, much more. Maybe Tennessee will have a coach. Maybe Florida State won't. Maybe Oregon won't. Who the heck knows? Ugh. It is a fast-moving situation in college football, at least as it relates to the coaching carousel.
I'm not going to ask you to drop anything big and stanky, Ty, but I don't know if we pointed out on our recap show, Lehigh did lose to Stony Brook.
They lost by, I believe, 59-29?
Yeah, by a considerable margin. The pride of Long Island and Joe Nathan, whatever, they did take it to the Mountain Hawks.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, but you know, we're going to be doing a pretty, I think it's a 3-part Pat League review show in the off season. So fear not, Pat League discussion points are forthcoming.
On that note, thank you everyone out there for bearing with us here. Hope you enjoyed the program. We enjoyed making it for you. Please do stay tuned for more information regarding our live show, which is happening in Atlanta in early January, the Saturday before the College Football National Championship. Yeah, it's going to be January 6th.
Leave your evening open, Ty.
Yes. On that note, for that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, enjoy college football. Catch you on Sunday. Stay solid.
Peace.